Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey there! It's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel finding dodo birds. Leaky Black, the Eye on College Basketball Podcast, is presented by Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's. A sub above. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Also do that while you're here. Okay, let's get into it. Some big ACC news this morning. The Cavender Twins have announced they're not returning to Miami. The Legends are retiring from basketball. Your thoughts, Dead Leg?
Back-to-back podcasts on off-season? What is going on?
Wow. What are we doing?
What are we doing? Well, you know what? We're going to get right into that. Cavender Twins, damn you. I'm taking a little mini vacay with the fam later this week. So we always planned, or at least I always planned, for a coaching carousel one. And then Kyle Filipowski went out and did what he did. I did see the Cavender news earlier. I have no thoughts. I'm returning serve right back to you. Your thoughts on the Cavender Twins? I don't know if they're retiring. I think they're just leaving Miami. Are they done with college basketball? They could play basketball again, conceivably. I don't know if they're hanging up their jerseys for good.
What I read is that they are retiring from basketball.
Okay. You seem eager for this development.
They're always up to something, those Cavender Twins. You know?
Yeah.
They're always doing something.
That's the big ACC decision news on this Tuesday. That's for sure.
In all seriousness, I read that they already have an NIL deal with WWE.
They might get out of here.
They might go into wrestling, be the next Bella Twins.
Don't know who those are, but I will say I did learn at the Final Four, Parrish is now a huge WWE. He's wrestling dude now. So they're pivoting right into your lane. Congrats.
They're going to be
Watch your mouth, Norlander.
They're going to be in my life.
I'm outnumbered.
They're going to be in my life forever, the Cavender Twins. Those gals are always up to something. Perhaps they'll replace Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez as your WWE Women's Tag Team Champions.
Don't know who those people are, but I'm happy for you. I'm happy for both of you, okay? I got nothing against wrestling is in my bag. That's all. I got nothing against folks that like wrestling. But
I grew up watching it and then got out of it in my adult life, and my little guy started watching it, and I have become genuinely interested.
Threw a wrestling watch party at the Final Four. He didn't want to socialize with me or anyone. He just stayed in his room and watched. Was it WrestleMania? Was that the one?
Yeah, WrestleMania on Sunday night. We had a little party in my hotel.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. More power to you.
All right. There was also some other big ACC news on the will he go or will he stay front Tuesday morning. Duke Big, Kyle Filipowski, announced that he will return to college for a sophomore season despite being projected as a possible lottery pick in the 2023 NBA draft. Huge development for John Shire. Filipowski averaged a team-high 15.1 points, team-high 8.9 rebounds, 29.2 minutes per game this past season. He was the best freshman in the country not named Brandon Miller. Now he'll presumably be the best sophomore in the country for a program that will now return the top four scores from a team that went 10-1 in its final 11 games while winning the ACC tournament. Duke is also enrolling a recruiting class that is currently ranked second nationally, although it should be noted the highest ranked player in that class as of last night, Mackenzie Mbako, He's ranked seventh in the class of 2023, has asked for a release from his letter.
I wonder why that is.
From his letter of intent.
These things seem connected.
Come he on, said, I'm not dude. Going to sit on the bench behind this goofy dude coming back to school. Get out of my way or I'm going somewhere else. Let's so go. The class is still good. I believe still 4 5-star prospects in it. My question for you, because I've got to update the top 25 and one again later
yeah,
today.
You do. Okay.
How high should Duke be in the top 25 and one?
Come on, Duke.
All right. I'm seeing some Duke should be preseason number one. Can we just slow? It's April 11th. Can we slow down? Now, I understand the nature of this stuff now in the offseason. These rankings, first of all, Parrish is setting the bar. Okay. Folks used to be doing it every few weeks. Now it's every damn day. Okay. Parrish, you're about to, is it 4.0 already?
We're about to be at 4.0. Somebody asked a reasonable question on Twitter yesterday. Like, if I never do a 1.7 or a 2.4 right. or a 3.5, yeah. why am I doing point zeros to begin with?
Correct.
And you know what? I've said this before, so I should revisit it. Most of the replies I get to rankings on Twitter are nonsensical. They come from not so smart people. But that's a totally reasonable question this person asked. Totally reasonable.
It's reasonable, but I checked your top 25 and one, man. That's... I can see you're in defense mode. This ranking is based upon every single capsule.
No, it's actually not defense mode. Okay. What it is the tool we use doesn't allow me to have roster projections in that tool. You have to write sentences. And so what I'm trying to do with each, and by the way, this is a whole nother problem.
Why did I even bring this up?
What I'm trying to do with each team's sentences is explain who I believe is coming back and who I believe is not coming back. The problem is most people click on that link on their mobile device. And on your mobile device, when you click on that link, those sentences don't show up unless you click on the specific team to make them show up. You're so done. A lot of my, and these are reasonable questions too, because people click on it. They don't see it. They just see.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's a problem, but it's an issue for me.
That's exactly what you want to say.
It is an issue because people click on it. And they go, well, who is it? Does this mean Zach Edey's coming back? And if you click on Purdue, I write that, yes, this is based on the idea of Zach Edey coming back. But most people don't know to click on that. It's a struggle, man. Life is full of challenges.
I'm checking right now. I'm checking this right now as we speak. I'm on the mobile. Where's the top 20? So you say I go to the rankings. I'm going to the rankings right now.
If you click on my link,
yeah.
The link that I tweeted.
Yeah, it's not here.
It doesn't show up.
Look at this. It's just the teams.
It's something I've brought up before.
Okay. Well, it has get not- in with the tech team. See how that works out for you. Why don't you get down there? Get into the back end. Start working with code. Let's see how that
goes. I wonder if it seems like my feedback was dismissed. There's just some people sitting in a room somewhere like, well, hey, they're not tweeting us about it. Who cares?
Exactly. Who cares? By the way, GP's ranking of Duke 7 had Kyle Filipowski leaving.
I was right. So I've got to move him up. The question is how high? Because I've seen some preseason number one stuff too. And frankly, I don't get that.
I can't. I mean, should Duke be in the conversation? Sure. With Filipowski back. I mean, Filipowski is a top 3 freshman. And as I tweeted earlier on Tuesday, whether it's first, second, or third team, he will be a preseason All-American at CBSSports.com. I can tell you, as long as he's still scheduled to be in uniform and on campus come October when we do that, there's really no argument against it because he was Duke's best player. We also have Jeremy Roach is declared for the draft, but he's not definitely gone. And whether he comes back is also a factor. We're like in this thing right now, you have Roach coming back.
I am projecting Filipowski, Jeremy Roach, Tyrese Proctor, Mark Mitchell, all back. 4 players who averaged at least 9.1 points per game. They were the top 4 scorers on a team that finished 18th at KenPom and got a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. I have them with the top 4 scorers back and a top 2 recruiting class. I will get them in the top 5.
Yeah.
I don't know later, how much FAU. Higher I go than that, because it's like I've based on my projections, current projections, I have UConn returning 5 of the top 6 from the national championship team and enrolling a 5-star prospect. I've got Purdue bringing back, I believe, the top 7 scorers from a team that got a 1 seed in the tournament. I've got Marquette bringing back everybody from a team that won the Big East tournament and got a two seed.
And got just as far in the tournament as Duke did, oh, by the way.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, listen, we might look up in December and it's crystal clear. Duke's the best team in the country, right?
Yeah, sure.
But based on current roster projections and, for lack of a better word, paper, I don't know how you get Duke above those three. I think where I'm at is I probably Duke up to number four behind UConn, Purdue, and Marquette, just ahead of Miami and Florida Atlantic.
No argument from me there. And all that's reasonable. Knowing full well that we'll look up in the middle of January and these things will be busted, which reminds me, and I don't have it still. I've been looking for it. Every offseason, I try and take stock of your 1.0 just to see how much changes. You're already on 4.0. If you've got your original 1.0 edition, I need you to send it to me so I can go back to it at the start of next season. I cannot find the one from last offseason, but just to bring up how much things have changed. If I can find it in the next few episodes later in April, I'll bring it up just to say, hey, look at how much things changed there. But heading in, Duke should be top five. I think that's fair. And yes, I'm seeing in the comments here, there is a plenty of Caden Shedrick noise, who was a good player at Virginia. I think he is. Now, if he goes to Duke and how he fits alongside them, I don't know. I think he's got real breakout potential, even if he's going to be somewhat limited defensively. Man, he can be a real beast there. So if they also get Shedrick at that point and Roach returns, then we got a real conversation overall with all that. But listen, it's a nice boon. By the way, this is now two bigs. You know, if we go off what Sam Bassini, Sam, we'll get to you if we can on this episode. But Sam had Kling in first round. Filipowski definitely would have gone in the first round. Kind of refreshing. We got a couple of well-known, really, really good freshman bigs who have an NBA future. I mean, 99% confident both Donovan Klingon and Kyle Filipowski will ultimately both be picked, and almost certainly will both be eventually first round draft picks. They might even be, they'll probably be first round draft picks in 2024. But nonetheless, that's a player at Duke and a player for the reigning national champion blue blood program, UConn Huskies, coming back to college basketball. That's a great thing.
Yeah. And like I said, Filipowski was, and I agree with you, you know, he will be a preseason All-American. He was one of the best freshmen in the country. I think when we turned in our ballots for freshman of the year, I was one Brandon Miller, two Kyle Filipowski, three Grady Dick. So he's a terrific college basketball player. His issue as an NBA prospect, which is among the reasons he's back, although he was going to be a first round pick almost certainly. So he turned down, it appears, guaranteed money to come back to Duke. Worth noting, Duke is a school that hired an NIL person. They're on top of this. He'll be just fine. They're on top of this. I promise you, if he's leaving money on the table, it's probably not a lot. He's going to be able to pay his car note, if he even has a car note. Probably has a free car in there somewhere. He's not a real rim protector, and he's not a great 3-point shooter. Although I think he does have 3-point shooting potential. I guess I was surprised when I looked this morning. What do you think he shot from three this season? I was surprised by this.
Percentage-wise?
Yeah. Because when I think of Kyle Filipowski, I think of a good shooter. What do you think he shot?
Well, you're leading the witness, so I'm going to say right. Flip shot 26% from three.
28.2. It was okay. In the 20s. That's obviously not good.
But you can see that. No, that's not good. It's not terrible. You can see the shot. He's got good release, and so he could turn that into 36% as a sophomore. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Me neither. I hesitate to call him a good shooter because the percentage doesn't back that up, but he looks like he has shooting potential. Like he can be a reliably good 3-point shooter at 6'11". The other stuff, you know, might not ever be there, but he's an NBA player who will be in college basketball next season. And this is among the thing. This will be my last thing on this and we'll move on. It's among the reasons I was always in favor of name, image, and likeness rights. Even though it complicates the sport and some people are oddly bothered by it, the truth is it's going to keep some people in school longer than they otherwise would be. I doubt Cal Filipowski's back in school without name, image, and likeness rights being a reality. But given that they are, he is definitely going to be back at Duke next season, and the Blue Devils will start in the top five of the top 25-1. And I guess that would make them my favorite to win the ACC, just ahead of of Miami. I'm looking at other ACC schools I have in the top 25 and one. It'll be Duke at 4, Miami at 5. And then, is that it? I think that's it. My only two ACC schools in the top 25 and one.
I'm looking right now. That really, I guess. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's all you have. And even though the ACC has been down, is that really going to be the case again? Like, are we going to get to the final AP poll Monday after Selection Sunday with only two ACC teams ranked?
I mean, maybe.
It's possible, but.
I mean, if you look at this season, they only had two schools finish in the top 25 at KenPom. Duke at 18, Miami at 24. It was Virginia at 34. So they only had two. They only had two in the top 30 at KenPom last season. And at least on paper right now, based on roster projections, it looks like it'll probably be another down year for the ACC. But possibly a breakthrough season for John Shire, who will have in year two on paper a team that looks good enough to compete for the national title.
It'll be interesting in the ACC next season, GP, because we got a few new coaching hires in that conference, don't we?
Nice segue. Supposed to be a coaching carousel podcast. 15 minutes into it, it's going to be. We'll get to that next, but first, a word from our partners.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
It's coaching carousel time. One of the interesting things about the month of March is that there's a big basketball tournament they play.
There's a huge one. There's two huge ones, but one in particular that we focus on. That's right.
Yeah, they put 68 teams in it. A lot of people
got to put 68 teams in the tournament, Gary.
The thing a lot of people don't remember, you got to only four teams can make the Final Four. You know,
theoretically,
only. And then only two can make the title game. Only one can win the whole thing.
San Diego State played Florida Atlantic for the national title. I don't know if you realize that. Those teams played.
What in the world?
I know.
What in the world? So these big coaching changes happen. Rick Pitino to St. John's, Ed Cooley to Georgetown. And we don't have a lot of time to spend.
Ed Cooley went to Georgetown?
Oh,
that's
man.
Why we're doing this episode.
The episode is really just designed to catch Norlander up on what's been happening on the coaching.
The one person who I assure you does not need to be caught up was the dude trying to file stories in the middle of the air, updating the coaching carousel flying down to the Final Four. But yes.
So we didn't talk about these things in any detail, and we might not talk about them in any detail now, but we're going to try to. Trivia time, Mr. Coaching Carousel Tracker.
Oh. Boom. What do you got for me?
How many Division I schools will have new coaches next season?
Well, I update the tracker.
I know. I just remembered that.
So you're trivia timing the author of that post.
I'm trivia timing literally something you wrote.
Trivia time, GP. Okay. Who is Gary Parrish have as number one in his preseason? Yeah, that's what this is. 55, I believe, is the most recent number. As of when I updated that puppy on like Sunday. Is that correct?
And I'm just trusting you on this. 51 of those 55 jobs have been filled.
Yeah.
So 15% of Division I jobs opened this either season or
timing on my own. We can make that a trend. I'm good with that.
I just start reading the first paragraph of your stories and then developing a trivia time.
Let's see if I can get them this time.
Trivia time. How do you spell Norlander?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there have been many, but trivia time.
Okay.
You should get this. How many at the high major level?
Oh, I don't.
Come on, man. He's looking at he's counting the names right now.
No, I'm not counting anything. Okay. I'm just staring. I'm just blank staring at my computer screen. I'm not counting.
The number is 11.
11 I will read is what
down,
I
will read you down the 11. I think, hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That was 11 in order. Texas hired Rodney Terry. Georgetown hired Ed Cooley.
What?
Syracuse promoted Adrian Autry. Providence plucked Kim English. Notre Dame made Micah Shrewsbury a made man. Texas Tech got Grant McCaslin. If I can do this with alliteration for everyone. St. John's reeled in Rick Pitino. Mm-hmm. Georgia Tech.
Landed.
No, that, it.
Secured.
It dabbled with and then eventually signed Damon Stoudemire.
They dabbled with Damon Stoudemire.
Mississippi controversially hired Chris Beard. Penn State made good with Mike Rhodes and Cal. It's another M. Damn it. Cal. I don't even know. Mad Dog Mark Madsen put pen to paper. Those are your 11 high majors. There's a few others outside that.
Married. They married Mark
Madsen. Married? How about that? There was a marriage between Mark Madsen and Cal, not Stanford. So those are the high major ones. What do you got, GP?
Well, so we're obviously not going to go through every one of these, but I am interested.
Yeah.
What are the three hires in order that you would bet your 401k on? This is going to work out fine.
All right.
It's going to work well.
Okay. Because what you had, sometimes we like to go into this blind, but for this particular one, Paris did say, have your three favorite hires ready. So what I have three favorite hires and three hires most likely to be successful. Okay. Those are two different things. The ones that I'm not going to.
Well, my favorites are ones that I think are going to be successful.
Well, I'm not going to rank Chris Beard as one of my three favorite hires. Okay. He has to be in the list of the three most likely to be successful hires.
That's fair.
And I have them in no order, but I think that the three most likely to be successful are Grant McCaslin at Texas Tech, Rick Pitino at St. John's, and Chris Beard at Ole Miss. I think when you look at that entire list, take everything into account and just say, who are the three coaches that are right now most likely to be successful, put themselves in the best position, however you want to define that. It springboards them to another job. They go to a Final Four. They have an amazing 10-plus-year legacy at that school. Whatever it is, I think that McCaslin, Pitino, and Beard are the three names. Who are your names?
Well, perhaps let's focus on Chris Beard for a second, because it's a complicated thing to talk about, right? Don't ever forget that Texas said, and perhaps for contractual reasons, but still put this in writing, we believe you're unfit to be the head coach at the University of Texas. And just a few months later, Ole Miss said, we believe you're fit, by definition, to be the head coach at the University of Mississippi. If I'm being completely honest, I don't know what to do with this, because I do think he deserved to lose his job at Texas. I do believe he crossed some lines on that night. The police report suggests as much. I'll never be somebody who just parrots, well, the charges were dropped. Well, the charges were dropped does not mean that nothing happened, that nothing bad happened, that a fireable offense didn't happen. So that complicates the whole story. Like, I keep in mind, like, my wife's an Ole Miss grad. I'm surrounded. My whole street is Ole Miss grads, and I can just tell you, they're fired up. My wife's not. My wife couldn't care less. I don't even think my wife knows who the head coach at Ole Miss is right now. But like, my friends who are Ole Miss grads who care about basketball or just care about the university in general, they are largely fired up. They're excited. I don't want to speak out of both sides of my mouth. If I were Ole Miss, I don't know that I would have done this, but now that they've done it, I do think it probably works. Although there is a track record for super successful coaches at other places coming to the state of Mississippi and it not going so well. Ben Howland being a great example of that at Mississippi State. So, again, I don't know that I would have done this if I were Ole Miss, but also don't know what the proper price is for somebody to pay, you know, for the things that Chris allegedly did. He did lose his dream job and millions of dollars. Like, he paid a significant price, and not to mention have his reputation damaged possibly forever, certainly significantly. So I'm with you. I think it probably works, but I would hesitate to put it on my list of favorite hires for the reasons that I think are obvious.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. And there's a chance that it works. Ole Miss is a bottom three job in the SEC. This was Beard's best option. He did get right back in. We did get on a podcast multiple times throughout the season and thought that he would not be hireable so soon. In retrospect, you could say that was naive of us, and you might be correct. But also, the local DA office said, we are not moving forward in this case because we don't think we have enough. Lawyers and prosecutors' offices and DA's offices, they move forward on cases that they think that they can win. And as truly ugly and appalling as that situation was, his fiance did recant some parts of her statement. And that was a major, major reason why the charge could not be pursued. And so it was dropped, and that allowed Ole Miss to eventually hire Chris Beard. He had an introductory press conference, which that happened amid all the crush of March. Didn't really get into too many details there. There was and apologies, I don't know the columnist off the top of my head. I don't have that in front of me, but he wrote a very good column on basically what still hasn't been said or admitted to, or really Beard not being as, if not forthcoming, apologetic about the situation. So he's not out of that. He's not in the clear. And for many people, by the way, and understandably so, like this is him having this job and being in this position and being afforded opportunity and employment at a high major university is beyond the pale. And to those people that have that opinion, I hear you all the way. But nonetheless, he does have it now, and we will see how he handles it moving forward. His credentials as a coach are undeniable. You saw what he did at Little Rock. He got into the tournament. They won a game. Then at Texas Tech, he takes them all the way to the title game. And at Texas, it was going in the right direction. It wasn't, you know, the major, major splash right away. But here we are. To listeners of the pod, there were a lot of people that reached out to us, be it the tweet machine or email or reviews or whatever. And I just can't say anecdotally for our audience, which, you know, sometimes GP likes to poke fun, and I get all that. We have a very passionate, intelligent audience when it comes to college sports, college basketball, a mature audience for the most part. And I'll just say with the Beard stuff, this incensed a lot of people that intake college basketball stuff on a weekly basis, off season, in season, all that. And I don't think that stuff just simply simmers and dies away with all this. So we'll see how it goes, but him, Patino, and McCaslin are my three. You have Beard on that list as well. Who are your other two?
Well, my other two, I think, are obvious, and I'm surprised you don't have one of them on there. My number one's Rick Pitino at St. John's. There's just no way imagine
he's that it getting doesn't old, work. But it still has never happened where he hasn't been really, really awesome at the college level. He has to be on the list.
You give Rick Pitino New York City and a billionaire booster, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. Like that, and like there's nothing in his track record as a college head coach that suggests this isn't going to work. He got Providence to the Final Four in year two, got Kentucky to the Elite Eight in his first year that UK was eligible for the NCAA tournament, which was technically year three, but that was the first year he was eligible to take Kentucky to the tournament. He took them to the Elite Eight, got Louisville to the round of 32 in year two, got Iona to the NCAA tournament in year one. So it's never taking him longer than his second year of eligibility to get his new school to the NCAA tournament. And I would predict that this will be similar. I think right now St. John's is not my top 25 and one, because I don't even know what the roster is going to look like. But I suspect by the opening day of the season, he'll have a roster combined with his track record that makes me go, yeah, that's one of the best 26 teams in the country.
Yep.
Ed Cooley's the other one.
I was going to say.
I mean, I just don't understand why anybody would think Ed Cooley's not going to work at Georgetown. He's coached in 7 of the past 9 NCAA tournaments at Providence, has finished top 4 in the Big East in 8 of the past 10 years. And now, and I don't say this to be funny or take a shot or anything, I just say it because it's true. He now has a better job, and a job that should be easier to recruit to, and a job that should be easier to win big at, which is among the reasons he took the job. And I know that was controversial when it went down. We didn't spend maybe any time on it at all. But I understand why Providence fans would be disappointed with Ed. Because, like, he's a
you
Providence.
Putting it lightly. Even I
am. Oh, it's not just disappointed. Yeah. Like, they have turned on him.
It is. It is Beard leaving Texas Tech for Texas levels of hatred.
Yes. And I get being disappointed. I guess I just stopped years ago questioning other people's career moves. I don't think it's my business to do it, because you make career decisions. We all do, based on things that are important to us, things that matter to our family. And this is one of those where, as I grew older, I think I've had a more proper understanding of it, because I have not made every career choice that would be obvious for other people to make. But every time I've looked at options and talked with my family and decided, okay, this is what's best for us now. And sometimes I've turned down things 1 year and accepted them, you know, 3 years later. And again, the decisions I've made are not the same decisions everybody in my situation would make. And if you can look yourself in the mirror and accept that as truth, who am I to tell Ed Cooley what he should or should not do as it pertains to his career? Like, he has a contract. There are ways out of it. He exercised a way out of it and accepted an opportunity with a new employer. Like, if you can ever take your fandom and set it aside, that's all he did, is he left one job for another job because he must have felt on some level it was best for him and his family, or best for whatever his criteria was. So I just don't get worked up with that anymore, or bothered by it at all. These people all have jobs just like we have jobs. Their jobs are more high profile, often better paying, but they're just jobs. And I don't mean to strip it down and take all the emotion out of it, but I know it was hard for Ed to walk away from Providence, but he felt it was the right thing to do at that time. And so I don't get mad at him. I wish him luck, because I think he's one of the best coaches in college basketball. I like him a lot on a personal level, and I think he's going to be great at Georgetown. I think Georgetown was smart to target him. And again, if I were him, I don't know if I would have wanted to do what he did, because you do sacrifice something. You go from being able to walk around your hometown forever being loved to now you'll never be loved at that place again. I mean, never is a long time, but it's not looking good. It's not looking good. You sacrifice that. I don't know if I would have wanted to sacrifice that, but he was willing to do it, and I'm okay with that. I think he's going to be great at Georgetown.
It is fascinating to follow the Big East with these moves. You know, Kim English, it makes a big jump. You know, he's young. He's, what, 34? He goes up to replace Ed at Providence, and Ed goes down to D.C. The reason why he's not on my list is Ed had it wired at Providence, not in terms of he could get any guy that he wanted, but, you know, that truly has one of the elite practices. It has one of the best facilities in the entire country. Yes, Providence, like top 5. If you talk to the folks that have been to enough of these places, and, you know, I may or may not be one of them, but certainly other people that travel all around and coaches that go through there, there's like it. They have a really, really great situation there with an intense, a local, but a just impassioned, out of its mind fan base, a top 3-1 in the league, which Georgetown does not have. And Ed was able to really run that program and still have something of a comfortable life. That's not what this is now. And I'm not saying he can't do it. He is obviously willing to do it. He is wanting to do it. He's taken on the challenge. But Georgetown, as an athletic department, talk to anyone around the league, had dysfunction there. It is a better job. It is a tougher job. Ed Cooley is not in this for the next 15 years to be a head coach. How do I know that? He's literally told me on the record multiple times. Okay. He's gonna try and make a go of this for a good 5 to 8 years. And if he does, he can be the savior to Georgetown basketball, and what an incredible legacy that would be. And that's part of why he's doing this, part of it. But it is a tough task. It is a tall ask. And, you know, Willard's doing just a fine job there in Maryland as well. That's a very competitive area. Oh, by the way, you know, even though these programs aren't on the exact same level, you will have like VCU right now operates as a better program than Georgetown. That's not arguable. It's not in a better league, but it's not so it's, you know, it's a stone's throw from there. And they just hired a really, really good coach in Ryan Odom. We'll get to our best of the rest, if you will, outside the Big Six leagues in just a few minutes here. Grant McCaslin has always been good. His style isn't the most watchable, but made North Texas awesome year after year, particularly at that level. And I think he's most likely with the way that he coaches to be, I think he's more likely than Ed narrowly. So that's why I went McCaslin over Ed. Ed's going to have to put in the work. I think he will. But from a day-to-day, week-to-week process of what how Ed was living his life the past 3 or 4 years versus how he's going to need to do it at Georgetown, it's going to be a major step up. And so I just want to see it happen because Georgetown has never been worse as a program. Or at least it never, as of a month ago, it was at its absolute nadir in its existence. And so now Cooley has to lift it all the way back up. He's certainly good enough to do it. I just want to see him happen. So that's where I split the difference there, GP.
I guess my only thing on him as it pertains to Grant or anybody else, or most anybody else, you're asking, like, I think Grant's going to be really good at Texas Tech, but you are asking him to operate in an incredibly tough league.
Operated before, not as a head coach, but he knows.
Of course. Yeah. For people who don't know, he was on staff with Scott Drew at Baylor. Scott Drew has one of the great coaching trees now.
Yes.
He's got the.
By the way, Shaka also has a really good coaching tree as a side note. Those are two guys that have really, in the past few years, branched out and they have a ton of former assistants who are now head coaches.
Yeah. My point is, you're asking Grant to upgrade leagues and go do it at a place that doesn't really have a natural. I mean, listen, it's in the state of Texas. I got it. But like Texas is the king of Texas. Baylor's also there. You're asking him to go into a league and as a head coach win at a level he's never won at. I think he'll do it, but that's what you're asking. With Ed, you're just saying, hey man, you've been doing great in this league for a decade. Can you just keep being great in this exact same league? It just seems like a smoother, less complicated transition. With Rick, you're Pitino at St. John, you're just asking him to win in a league he's already won in at the level at which he's already won. With Rick and Ed, you're not asking them to do anything they haven't done. With most of the rest of these guys, you are asking them to do something they've never done. Some of them will do it, some of them won't, but you're asking them to do something they've never done.
Which is why Ed Cooley is in my three favorite hires. So it's a little bit different. This is in terms of fit, how I think it's going to go, how successful relative to expectations I think it's going to happen. So the three most, the ones that I think you have to evaluate as three most likely to be successful for me are Pitino, Beard, and McCaslin. My three favorite are McCaslin, because I think the fit with Texas Tech is perfect. McCaslin had opportunities at power conference jobs in recent years, and he turned them all down. This was the one that he finally took. Micah Shrewsbury at Notre Dame and then Cooley at Georgetown are my three favorites. Now, the reason why, I'll be quick on this. The reason why McCaslin, I've mentioned it all, but I think that the fit works. Texas Tech, which is in an intriguing spot in that shifting landscape of that conference. I think that he will be good enough to keep Texas Tech anywhere from, you know, third to seventh most years that he's there. And that's simply, that is good enough for Texas Tech. It should be. Look at the historical track record of that university. Cooley, part of it is just the chaos bomb he threw into the Big East and the plot lines and all of everything that's surrounding him leaving Providence but staying in the Big East. But he goes down to Georgetown, his bravado, his press conference. I did watch it when he had it, you know, watched it later that day was, you know, it was Cooley at his best behind the mic. Few dudes who are actually funnier and more self-deprecating in the profession than Ed Cooley. I think that he can do a very, very good job. I'm not convinced he's going to do the best job, but I do love the hire because of everything that surrounds it and the potential that can be there. And please, like, let us have Georgetown be interesting again. Coincidentally enough, by the way, Syracuse and Georgetown, not in the same conference anymore, but who have ever thought that they would have been hunting for new coaches in the same year. One promoted from within, Red Autry, gets the bump up after Boeheim retires. And then Cooley steps in, and he is the first. Autry is in-house connected to Boeheim. Georgetown, for the first time in 50 plus years, doesn't make a direct, you know, Cooley and John Thompson have a few threads that connect them, but he did not serve as a coach under John Thompson. He's not a direct legacy hire in the same way. And so that's the first time we've seen that in 5+ decades. And then Micah Shrewsbury, I think, has a wonderful chance to be, if he wants this, because it's one of those things where if he's awesome, dude served on a staff at Brad Stevens, and it wouldn't surprise me if we looked up in 5 years and Micah Shrewsbury is suddenly like an NBA candidate. He's got that vibe about him, but it would not surprise me if this really hits and this really works, if Notre Dame wound up hiring its head coach for the next 15 years. You know, it hired Mike Bray. That lasted more than 2 decades. The goal here for Jack Swarbrick is obviously to do that as well. This is the first hire he made. Swarbrick was not the AD when Micah got on there. So I think that is a wonderful fit. Almost the entirety of Shrewsbury's life, with the exception of running Penn State for the past few years, serving under Stevens in Boston when Stevens was the head coach there, almost everything else was living in, playing in, coaching in the state of Indiana. And so now he goes up to South Bend. It wasn't the noisiest, splashiest hire. It was a well-respected hire, but there were some bigger names in this. It just wouldn't surprise me if that wound up working out really, really, really well. It's one of three ACC hires, just as a conference reset here from the high majors. ACC had three. Autry, Stoudemire, who GP knows, and then Shrewsbury. Big East had Cooley, Patino, English. Big 12 at 2. McCaslin, Rodney Terry got bumped up after his Elite Eight push. And then the SEC, Big 10, and Pac 12 each had one apiece with Beards. Rhodes, who scooted up from VCU to Penn State. And then and Rhodes has never been a bad head coach, oh, by the way. So Penn State, you're affording a coach more money and opportunity and resources than ever. So we'll see if Rhodes can make it work. He's got a nice head start. And then the fact that Mark Madsen got to Cal, I find to be riveting. Now, real quick on this, GP. Stanford decided to keep Jared Haas. Okay. But by all means, again, do what you need to do, but he's never made the tournament. Stanford is an irrelevant power conference program right now. And you cannot tell me that Stanford would not have put the premium on hiring Madsen this year. Like, he did a really, really good job with Utah Valley, but that doesn't happen. Bernard Muir, the AD, decides to keep Haas for one more year. They got Harrison Ingram, you know, former five-star prospect. He's now transferring out. And man, oh man, who knows which ways these directions go, GP, but like, this could really be an inflection point for Stanford and Cal. Like, Cal is a worse job. There's no doubt about it. It's one of the worst power conference gigs out there, but Madsen takes it. And I was told that Mike Montgomery, who coached Madsen at Stanford and then obviously went on to later coach at Cal, was a part of this as well, and definitely had an influential say in all the matter. So we've got coaches going into enemy territory, so to speak, in this cycle, which we don't often have. Sometimes we don't often have it, and I find that to be pretty intriguing. But that's your power conference wrap up of things.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
What's up, y'all? This is four-time NBA champ Andre Iguodala.
Yo, and this is his best friend, the Ohio State legend, Evan Marcel Turner I.
Every Wednesday, we drop a new episode on our show, Point Four.
We're talking basketball, business, and all the culture in between.
From locker room stories to some basketball analysis from those who've been in the game.
Now, it is a do average of 29 and 11. God, what did it take to be an all-star?
A win. Subscribe to Point Forward, the podcast, so you don't miss a thing.
A couple things. On the Mark Madsen to Cal thing, first off, I was surprised that Stanford kept Jared. And I don't say, you know, like, I don't wish anybody, like, everybody has families and mortgages and stuff. Like, I don't celebrate anybody getting fired, but I thought he was probably about to. I mean, 7 years, no NCAA tournaments, 59 and 72 in the Pac-12. Again, I say this as respectfully as I can say it. If I were running that, I would have thought it's probably time for a change. If you hear Cal is probably going to try to hire one of your prominent alums, should that move you at all? Like, if you're on the fence but leaning towards keeping Jared, but then you recognize if we don't make a move, Cal is going to hire one of our most famous alums, somebody we might have thought could just be our next head coach. Does that make you
I think Stanford is a different spot. I've been told it's way different from an NIL perspective as well. I'm just speaking from as someone who just tries to track the stuff behind the scenes. It was considered better than 50-50 a year ago that Stanford would make a change, then it didn't. And then, you know, if we did a temp check on Valentine's Day, it was like, yeah, 95-5, that job is going to open and Mark Mattson should be the next one to get it. And then that didn't happen. And then they got knocked out of the Pac-12 tournament. I was sitting there with Borzello and we were eating pizza at 1 a.m. because it's 10 o'clock Pacific time. Reached out to the AD. I said, hey, are you in fact going to keep Jared? He said, yes, that's the case. I was like, okay, here we go. So I hear you. And again, I'm not rooting against one coach or another, but yes, the expectation was that they should have moved on and then they didn't. Now, Cal's a tough job, and Stanford, I still maintain, is a better job than Cal. But South Bay, here he comes, and he gets Fardaz Amac, which is a nice little get for him. They will reunite after they were together at Utah Valley a couple of years ago.
One last thing at the high major level, you mentioned it. Damon Stoudemire at Georgia Tech is another hire that I like. I've known Damon for a fairly long time at this point. He, since 2008 has been on a staff in some form. At the collegiate level, he's worked at Rice, University of Memphis, Arizona. He was the head coach at Pacific. In the NBA, he's worked for the Grizzlies and the Celtics. And I know that he didn't like knock it out of the park at Pacific, but I mean, you talk about hard jobs.
Yes.
He finished in the top five in the WCC in three of his final four seasons. Since he's left, he's been gone 2 years. Pacific has finished eighth and tied for sixth in the WCC. So they are 10-20 in the WCC since Damon left, and they were 30-33 in the WCC, just three games under 500 in his final 4 years at Pacific. And I guess what I like most about the hire is what I remember thinking when I got to know Damon when he worked in Memphis was, sometimes you have these perceptions of NBA players, former NBA players who are trying to get into college coaching, and you wonder if they understand the landscape, or if it's just a job. You know, do they have the passion? You know, they made millions of dollars. Do they have the passion like a normal assistant coach trying to climb the ladder, like fighting for his career? And I just remember meeting Damon and getting to know him and going, wow, this guy's sharp. Like he's a sharp guy, like a smart guy, an impressive guy. And I didn't know that from a distance, but getting around him, just listening to the way he speaks, realizing how much he understood the jobs that he had. Like he came to the University of Memphis with very little on-campus experience. And it was just, he understood the job that he had better than I think most new assistants understand the job he had. I was just really impressed with him right from the jump. And that was a little bit of an outside the box hire for Georgia Tech to go hire him off of the Celtic staff. But Georgia Tech's a harder job, I think, than people realize, because they've had some little blips of big time success here and there.
Yeah.
But it's a harder job than people realize. Every time somebody gets that job, they go, well, if you can lock down Atlanta, then, but nobody ever locks down Atlanta, right? The Georgia coach can't do it. The Georgia Tech coach can't do it.
I think with the only exception of DePaul, there isn't a harder job in a better recruiting area than Georgia Tech. Some of that's institutional stuff with guys needing, like when it comes to like guys have to be in class until I think the pandemic, Georgia Tech was the only high major that didn't even offer online classes as an option for players on scholarship, just stuff in the weeds there. And like,
if you go look,
I think DePaul's the only one that's in a great, one of the top 8 to 10 recruiting areas in the country that might be in a worse spot, because Georgia Tech is right there in Atlanta. Theoretically, it should do better than it does, but it's a very, very tough academic institution that plays a part of it.
Yeah, like at some point, you just have to understand, like, the Georgia coach probably doesn't lock up Atlanta, and the Georgia Tech coach probably doesn't lock up Atlanta. Everybody recruits Atlanta, including Auburn, which is just, like, right there. So do this when you get bored one day. Go look at, like, the last 30 years of Georgia Tech basketball, regardless of coach. I bet you it is worse than you think, because they've had these – because everybody remembers, if you're old enough, the Marbury stuff. And then Paul Hewitt, like, bounced into a championship game one year. So you remember, like, Georgia Tech as a significant thing, but it's been bad more often than it's been good. So it's a challenging job, but I would bet on Damon. I think he's going to be good there. I really like that hire. If you'd have asked me in January, who should Georgia Tech hire, I'd have given you some names. I probably wouldn't have mentioned Damon because it wouldn't have popped into my head. But when I first heard him as a possibility there, I was like, ooh, I like that. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be good there. He's an impressive guy.
I do as well. Well, let's look at non Big Six ones. Here are to me the seven most notable non Big Six ones. All right. Paul Mills goes to Wichita State. Adam Fisher, a Penn State assistant, winds up getting Temple. The Temple search was a disaster, but Fisher, we'll see. We'll see if it works. Tobin Anderson, the darling of the dance, went from coaching FDU after being a D2 coach, coaching FDU for 1 year, and now he replaces Patino at Iona. Ross Hodge, who was regarded as among the top five assistants in all of college basketball, he will be promoted from within at North Texas, was the defensive mastermind of the Mean Green. Utah State plucks Montana State's Danny Sprinkle, so Mountain West job came open after Ryan Odom left for VCU. That's another one that closed. And then Western Kentucky, Steve Lutz, who took Texas A&M Corpus Christi to two straight NCAA tournaments, previously an assistant at Creighton. And under Purdue, he was the first assistant to get in and watch Zach Edey. What's your favorite? And if yours could be outside of this group, but what's your favorite non-Big Six hire, GP?
I like the Tobin Anderson hire. I like guys who show they can win at different levels. That guy just, by all accounts, is just a hell of a basketball coach. So I really like that one. I don't think he's someone, you know, he won at a significant level. Even before he got to Division I. So I think that's going to work. I like John Gallagher at Manhattan. And yes, that might just be personal bias. Like, I love John Gallagher. I think everybody who knows John Gallagher loves John Gallagher. But I'm glad to have him back in. You know, he was the coach at Hartford, and they were dropping out of Division I. And correct me if I'm wrong, he resigned on the opening day of the season. Is that right?
It was either the opening day or the day before. Yeah,
there was right there. I'm glad he's back in. So I love John at Manhattan. Brooks Savage at East Tennessee State. You know, I've known Brooks since he was.
Yeah.
If he wasn't
huge rom-com guy, by the way, big time Hitch fan. Need to put that out there. And he would be proud of me mentioning that. Huge, huge rom-com guy.
If I haven't known Brooks since he was a student or kid or teenager, that feels like I have, right? He was at Tennessee with those guys. He was at East Tennessee State with Steve Forbes. He followed Forbes to Wake Forest, and now he gets to go back to East Tennessee State to be the head coach there. He's a young guy, but another really sharp, impressive guy. I think he'll do good things there. And then Amir Abdur-Rahim at South Florida you look at what he did at Kennesaw State, how he turned that thing around.
Hootie who?
Hootie who?
What's the acronym? Come on.
Bone?
No, yeah, well, bone is the acronym. What are the words?
Build, organize.
Not to put it on the screen.
Nutrition.
No.
Nourish. Nourish. Nourish.
Electrify.
Build, organize, nourish.
Electrify.
Electrify.
Bone. Bone. Thank you, Amir Abdur-Rahim. By the way, a little inside, like, I'm almost positive that was Ryan Odom's job if VCU didn't come open, which isn't to say that Abdur-Rahim didn't deserve the job. He did, but this is how this works. Like, sometimes a guy that gets the job is either second. Sometimes he's Mick Cronin was like the eighth guy for UCLA, and shame on UCLA for taking that long to get to the best coach in program history. But sometimes that happens. And so Micah Shrewsbury, this is really among many dominoes that are in play. If Micah Shrewsbury does not choose to take the Notre Dame job and stays at Penn State instead, Mike Rhodes doesn't leave VCU, which means that I think Ryan Odom probably goes from Utah State to South Florida. That's not what happened. Amir Abdur-Rahim, a rising star in the profession, winds up getting USF, and we will see. That's an interesting job, GP. It's a bit lost at sea, but maybe he's the guy to get it going and get some real momentum there.
Yeah, like it was funny during the NCAA tournament. Like one night we had Amir in studio with us, CBS Sports Network, and like the next night we had Mike Bray in studio with us. They were both going for the same job.
Yeah, and by the way, Bray was also rumored to be involved in that as well, but then that went a different direction, and then Odom was,
right. Yes. But Amir, like, also, like, I hate to be repetitive, but like, just when you meet him, he's just an impressive guy. He's just sharp, smart. I really like that hire. I was happy for him to get that opportunity, but I also I thought it was smart by South Florida to go this direction. And that's not to be dismissive of any other candidate. I'm a believer. Like, I'd buy, to quote my friend John Rothstein, I'd buy stock now in Amir Abdur-Rahim.
You're late. Be good, you needed to buy it when he was at Kennesaw. Hootie hoo. Here we go.
I'm always late.
My favorite of the group is probably Ross Hodge. This is an assistant who didn't have any power conference position available to him, because frankly the defensive style that he employs, like, it probably wouldn't have been a philosophical match with some, but like annually for like 4 or 5 years now has turned down power conference opportunities to be the lead assistant, stuck with North Texas, waited it out, and now he gets a chance. That school is going into the American Athletic Conference there, so I think he's got the best chance at continuing to be successful, because he knows the players, knows the program, and now he just gets the promotion. Like, it should work. Crazy thing about Western Kentucky, I think Steve Lutz will do a good job. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show or not, but one of the more outrageous statistics, nuggets, if you will, is it just didn't work with Rick Stansbury, and that was a surprise. You know, there was occasional flashes of maybe this could work, but it just didn't. Rick Stansbury is the only coach in the 100-plus year, and it really doesn't count because they've only had a tournament since 39, but since 1939, every single other coach in the history of Western Kentucky had made the tournament, and Stansbury did not. He was the only one. Lutz will take the job. I think he will eventually get there. Now Western Kentucky is in a reformed CUSA. And by the way, I got something for you.
Okay.
Okay. See,
the team that won can have a lack of incentive to get going early. Now, if it were Western Kentucky against, I don't know, Florida Atlantic, I would think that they'd sweep that two-game schedule, no problem. But when you get comparable teams, the team that lost game one seems to have an edge in game two so far this season. We've seen it over and over again.
That is the great Gary Parrish just putting FAU 6 feet under. And yet, here we are. Shouts to Dusty May. As reported amid the Final Four, it became official over the weekend. 10-year contract. The terms are not disclosed. I'm told it's well north of $1 million. Every assistant getting a significant pay hike. They have more than $15 million available to all their facilities, but just in the basketball alone, it's north of $10 million with donations. And it, frankly, that was what the AD Brian White told me the Thursday before the Final Four. If that number is above $20 million right now, it wouldn't surprise me. So some renovations are going to begin later this spring, then some more significant ones are happening this summer, and then even more into 24 and 25 and so on. So Dusty May gets his big payday, and so does the staff. And oh, by the way, so do the players, as they should. They have plenty of NIL opportunities that have been made available to them, as should happen. You make the Final Four, pay those men their money, and they will be paid, and they deserve to after what they did and completely just... You know, they're dancing naked in the streets of Boca Raton, which is quite the vision, by the way, these days. But Dusty May on the mid-major scale, if you will, among the other coaching news, didn't get a new job, said he wouldn't take a new job. And he eventually will, if this goes the way that we expect it will. But he's coming back. FAU will be a preseason top 10 team. And he just signed a 10-year deal.
In fairness to me, that audio you heard was from the 2020-21 season. I was the sideline reporter from this studio. I was sitting literally right here as a sideline reporter.
That's called full circle, baby.
On a Conference USA game. And what I was explaining was CUSA that season had started scheduling back-to-backs, and there had a trend had developed where when comparable teams were playing each other, the team that won the first game would lose the second, vice versa. That's what I was being asked about. That's what I was discussing. And I just randomly threw out Florida Atlantic as an example because FAU did finish 13-10 that season, 181st at KenPom. Do I wish I would have said Florida International?
Yes, you do.
Yes. Yes, I do. Do I wish I would have said Rice? Of course I do. But I happen to say Florida Atlantic and Dusty is.
It's not Dusty, just that you said FAU. Dusty May is a podcast listener. He's at some point, I have to believe, going to listen to this very segment right now. He's probably cracking up. He's probably riding his bike to or from work, getting a little pod listen on the way home. You set in motion the Final Four run of 2020.
I'm responsible for Florida Atlantic's Final Four run.
You were going to get NIL deal. Point, so I might as well.
They got $15 million to throw around. Get me an NIL deal.
Yeah.
I don't think I get enough credit for what has happened at Florida Atlantic.
You.
Everybody's all like, Dusty May, he's great. What about me? Where would Dusty May be without me? Is that getting talked enough about?
It's not getting talked about. I know that much. Before we get out of here, I researched what you asked me, so we have to do this.
Well, I didn't, when I asked you, I didn't plan on the Cavender twins retiring from basketball or Cal Filipowski returning to Duke.
Well, let's do it. You asked, and Nada's even put one up. All right, so you asked.
Oh, wow. I didn't go pull receipts like this.
I got one for you and one for me. Don't worry.
Okay.
If you're not watching, Nada has a tweet from me from March 29th, 2019. It reads, Mark Fox has been hired at Cal per release. And I'm tweeting this 4 years ago. That's a good hire. I think it works out well for both parties.
Hold on. That is...
That one's on me. I was wrong. Extremely wrong. However, before we get to GP's one, don't show it yet, Nada. GP was like, all right, let's go pick out a past hire that you loved and it just didn't work out, and then pick out a hire you thought would bomb, but it worked. So the one that I thought would really work out was Chris Mack to Louisville. Not quite, although I wouldn't say that bombed, particularly because there was no 2020 tournament, but it didn't go the way that I thought. And then the two that I thought would not work out, I thought that these coaches would have 4 or 5 year ceilings at their gigs, but have proven me way wrong way often. I thought Jim Larrañaga would go to Miami and it would be there a few years and then they would have a new coach. Nope. Now he's going to, in my opinion, he's on his way to the Hall of Fame. It's a matter of when, not if. And then, and you and I disagreed on this. You were right. I thought Andy Enfield would be just fine at USC, be there 4 to 6 years, and it would just be fine. Instead, I mean, Bronny James could be committing there at any day now. At this point, the expectation, Bronny, he's going to land. LeBron James' son, USC has been obviously very, very good. So those were two that I missed on. What about you?
Well, I actually had in my list of ones I was right about, Andy Enfield at USC.
Okay. You asked for the ones we were wrong about, and then you're like, you know, while I'm at it, let me just...
I would rather talk about things I was right about, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, I had Ben Hallen not being good at Mississippi State, so I guess I'll just ride with that one.
I had Ben Hallen being good at Mississippi State, and that didn't work out. Honestly, I thought Patrick Ewing would be okay at Georgetown. I did not think that would be a disaster. I believed in that. I had Juwan Howard being good at Michigan, and I think that's mostly true.
I think we're still.
Yeah, there. I think it's mostly true. I'd rather not admit this, but I think I ultimately fell on the side of Billy Gillespie will be fine at Kentucky. I eventually got there, and then I went to Big Blue Badness, his first, And it was so obvious to me that he was uncomfortable.
I remember hearing the stories about how out of place he looked. Like it once, just,
Once the lights came on, he looked very uncomfortable in a way that, you know, like literally the opposite of John Calipari. Like once the lights came on for John, it was like he's comfortable in the lights. He'd be uncomfortable without them. But Billy seemed very uncomfortable. And then that thing just went the wrong direction in a variety of ways. I believed in Eric Musselman at Arkansas. I believed in Dan Hurley at UConn, but I think everybody.
I might have to pull this receipt here. This is too much. Anyone
am I
that
making
you
things up?
No, I tell you what, you were. Hey, look at this one.
I thought about this.
All right, April 21st, 2014, Gary Parrish.
I thought about this one.
Quote. Oh yeah, you thought about it. You weren't gonna bring it up, but I got you. Like I said, when Arizona got Sean Miller, Tennessee will eventually be glad that it stumbled into this hire. Donnie Tindall is a great fit.
I submit Donnie Tindall would have been fine if he wouldn't have broke a million rules at Southern Miss.
No. Not how this works. Not how this works. You take the whole kit and caboodle.
God.
168 retweets on that bad boy, by the way.
He lasted 1 year at Tennessee.
1 year.
Yeah, that's got to be the one for me.
That's among the biggest misses. I will say, you've talked about it in the pod in the past, you were wrong about something that you are now right about, but the schools got mixed up. Same coach. You did not like Fred Hoiberg to Iowa State.
I was wrong.
But Nebraska's kind of going that way. So, you know, and we'll see if they can turn it around. But that you were down on Hoiberg, and then that actually wound up getting him the Chicago Bulls job. And now here he is in Nebraska, and we'll see if they can get it going.
Fred's another one that I questioned the hire at the time. I didn't know him at all at the time. I subsequently got to know him, be around him. Another guy, really impressive. Once I met him, I was like, this might really work. But at the time, I was like, you're just going to go hire your famous alum who's never coached? I don't know if that'll work. Now everybody does it.
Now it's the way. Yes. But that's the coaching carousel wrap up. You know, I know we spent more attention on some coaches versus others, but we can't listen. We gave you back-to-back pods in the off season, hour plus. What else do you want from us?
I hope not another episode tomorrow.
The only thing we didn't touch on is Parrish hates, and I mean hates, the Kim English hire. Doesn't think it's going to work.
What? No. I love Kim English. You kidding me? Everybody loves. Who doesn't love Kim English?
I think you texted, I give it 3 years max.
You will never be able to prove that text message. The only text message about Kim English in my phone to anybody is probably to him saying, congratulations, I'm happy for you.
No. Hey, listen, we got a good variety of hirings at the high major level. Again, trivia time, how many?
55.
Well, 11 at the high major level. 55 high major changes. Well, that might take more than a single 65-minute episode. We'd be really in for it. It wouldn't be a good sign for the sport if we had 55 high major changes. 55 overall, 11 at the high major level. And there we have it. I'm going to do a little mini family vacay. You good to hold this ship down if Bronny James commits to USC in 48 hours or something like that?
I think I can do it.
Okay.
I think I'm equipped to do it.
By the way, we're off season. You could listen, dress the way you please, but I kind of liked you in the hoodie look. You're going blazer every episode now.
I've been having to shoot promo videos and stuff, so I have them all. I just have them around anyway.
That's true.
And then I have to reach because I have to get into my closet situation. But I keep my suits upstairs in my office closet, and like there are I keep mine in a proper closet.
I don't have a closet up here, okay? I don't have an extra room to store all my jackets and blazers. But anyway, continue.
So I reach a decision. Like, you know me, I'm always last minute to get in front of this camera for this podcast. So I have to make a decision because I wear these little white. I wear this every day. Like you will. I wear white t-shirts every day.
You shower with it on. I know. You shower with your t-shirt. Yeah.
So then I have to make a decision. Do I want to go downstairs and get a hoodie or a different t-shirt? Or do I just want to reach into this closet that's right beside me and grab a jacket and put it on? And the easier move is just put on a jacket. So here I am.
There you are.
You see my muscles?
Okay. It's time.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Huck. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening. or watching the Allen College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. At Apple, 5 stars, nice review. Type words. There's more of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the comments. If you're not subscribed to the YouTube channel, please do that while you're here. And we will talk to you again at some point, probably when breaking news requires it. Till then, take care.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!